Well, good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you're coming from across Canada. My name is Krista Ormiston, and I am the Communications Manager at Farm and Food Care Ontario. And I am joined today behind the scenes by Angela Larson, Communications Manager of Farm and Food Care Saskatchewan, who will be running the show in behind the scenes. Just wanting to let you know that we are recording this session so that you can come back to it later. Feel free to share it with your networks, and we're also capturing it for all of those who can't join us live in person today. So we would love to hear where you're tuning in from and a little bit more about who you are. So please feel free to share that in the comment section now. A little bit about who we are and why we're doing this today. So we are organizations that are made up of farmers, food processors, and partners from across agriculture and the food sector who are committed to building trust and transparency with Canadians. So Farm and Food Care brings farmers, agricultural professionals, related businesses, government organizations, and other groups together with a mandate to provide credible information on food and farming. So by providing those fact-based information and creating opportunities for Canadians to connect with those who grow and produce their food, the organization helps people better understand the food system, allowing them to make more informed decisions about what they eat and feed their families. So through initiatives like farm tours, educational resources, the Real Dirt on Farming magazine, digital storytelling, and public events, Farm and Food Care facilitates opportunities for Canadians to have their questions about food and farming answered directly by farmers. And this work is grounded in transparency, collaboration across the sector, and evidence-based communication. So our other partner for today in presenting this webinar is Canadian Food Focus, a national organization with the goal of improving food literacy of Canadian consumers from farm gate to plate. Canadian Food Focus explores how food is grown and raised and provides useful advice from experts to help people make confident food choices. The educational programming provides information about Canadian farming and food through articles, videos, and social media posts created by experts, including farmers, ranchers, dietitians, home economists, and chefs. So a little bit more about today. Today, we are pleased to be collaborating with two very talented communicators and food scientists from the Food Truth Project. The mission of this dynamic team is to demystify food, nutrition, and wellness misinformation using food science and critical thinking. Through workshops, webinars, public speaking, and digital content, they help people navigate their social media and food choices with confidence. So to introduce our speakers for today, Veronica Jaramillo is a Montreal-based food scientist and science communicator with a master's degree in food safety from McGill University. She is the co-founder of the Food Truth Project, a science-based communication initiative focused on addressing misinformation in food, nutrition, and agriculture while promoting media literacy. An experienced speaker, Veronica has delivered more than 30 workshops across North America, reaching over 5,000 people, with digital content viewed more than 500,000 times. Her work helps audience understand why misinformation spreads and how to communicate science with clarity, empathy, and impact. She also collaborates with the Unbiased Science Platform to develop accessible content that debunks trends and complex topics. Drawing in experience from academia, government, and public outreach, Veronica is passionate about building trust in the food system through evidence-based communication. Welcome, Veronica. And from a young age, Priscilla Lefticus was captivated by the world of food production, often watching how it's made with her father, and fascinated at the complex processes behind everyday items. This early curiosity led her to pursue a bachelor's degree in food science and agricultural chemistry at McGill University, which she completed in 2023. Building on her foundation in health sciences, since then she has gained hands-on experience in the food industry through roles in R&D, quality control, and quality assurance, and she now serves as a research project officer at the RITA Consortium. As co-founder of the Food Truth Project, Priscilla leads program development and outreach, delivering interactive workshops that build critical thinking and media literacy skills. She also launched the organization's internship program, supporting emerging food science students in sharing evidence-based information with their communities. Her work is driven by a commitment to making science approachable and actionable for everyday audiences. As I turn things over to Veronica and Priscilla to get things started, I would encourage you to actively participate in today's session in our chat section. Add your voices, your comments, and all of your questions throughout the webinar. And these two lovely ladies will engage with you and answer those questions. So turning it over, welcome Veronica and Priscilla. Thank you for sharing your time and your talents with us all today.
Thank you very much. And to everyone here, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. Welcome to our webinar, Tackling Misinformation, Tools for Evidence-Based Communication. We're going to talk about how to spot misinformation and how to utilize our media literacy to reduce its impact and its circulation. But before we get into the real bulk of the workshop, let's talk about a bit who we are. Krista gave a fantastic little brief introduction, but just to reiterate, my name is Veronica Jaramillo. I am a food scientist with a bachelor's of food science and a master's in food safety. And in terms of work experience, I'm, of course, the co-founder of the Food Truth Project, but I'm also a regulatory affairs scientist at the Coca-Cola Company. And I also do freelance research and science communication at the Unbiased Science podcast and platform. And when I'm not doing any of that, I'm also a private piano teacher. So if you're in Montreal and you want piano lessons, I'm your girl. And we also like to give some fun facts about us just to get like the ball rolling, because this can be a heavy topic sometimes. So fun facts about me is that if you can't already tell by the tone of my voice, I am a party princess. So when I'm not a scientist or a communicator on the weekends, I dress up as various Disney characters and entertain children's birthday parties and corporate events. So here's a couple pictures of me being a party princess. It's a lot of fun, I promise. And another fun fact is that I renovated a school bus. So I bought an old Ford E350 yellow school bus, and I renovated it completely from the inside out. This is a picture of it on the inside and the outside. It was a fantastic experience. I did it with a very close friend, and we ended up traveling all across Canada in it. And it was great. So those are two things about me that you might not have known, and just a little bit of an introduction.
Thank you, Veronica. So hi, everyone. I hope you're having a good day so far. My name is Priscilla Liftakis. I did a pre-university program in health sciences in Montreal. And then I also did my bachelor's, as Krista mentioned, in food science and agricultural chemistry from McGill University. I'm also the co-founder of the Food Truth Project. And I'm currently a research project officer at the RITA Consortium. We are a research innovation hub based at McGill University that links the food industry and academic research. And I've also have over 10 years experience in customer service, sales, the food industry. And then closer to almost graduating, I entered into R&D and quality control. And I really enjoyed my time working for different food processing companies. And in terms of fun facts, I became an entrepreneur when I was 18. So I built a bath and body business. So I had like bath salts, candles, and that's actually what got me through school and paid for my education. So I'm really grateful to have done that. And I also have a passion for travel, specifically to two places. So I like to go to Greece with my family and to have, my own food. And it's really fun. And there's a picture there of Mykonos. And I also like to travel to Italy. One of my favorite cities is Florence, so I put some pictures there. And on the bottom, you can see a picture of me making pasta. This was an activity where we were with a nonna in a small town, and she taught us how to make pasta from scratch. This was an amazing experience, so I always put it in there as my fun fact, because I did that. And one of my favorite quotes is, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So if you meet me in person, you might hear me say that quite often. So now that we've presented to you guys who we are, what is the Food Truth Project and why did we build this initiative? So the Food Truth Project is mainly two things. On one end, we have our educational workshops that are there to identify and debunk this information online. So we give workshops in high schools, colleges, different businesses, to adults as well, conferences. And this is a big part of what we do is we interact with our community. And on the other end, we have our online platform. This is aimed to discuss popular topics, look at different food myths, talk about different trends in the nutrition, food, and wellness space and ag to promote media and food science literacy for everyone. So our online platform, as Krista mentioned, has hundreds of thousands of views every month. So it's really building and it's really growing quite rapidly. And why did we build the Food Truth Project? So people ask us this all the time. And when we were food science students at university, we obviously are on social media and we would share with each other different videos that completely contradicted what we were learning in school, in food science and nutrition. And we were seeing a lot of fear-mongering online or things that were simply just not true. And we decided to do something about it. And this slide is really to show you that things happened so quickly. We applied for a grant in early 2023 with McGill, a bursary that we got from our university to start this initiative. And then everything kind of grew from there. We started giving workshops, we built our Instagram. And fast forward to now 3 years later, we've given workshops, industry workshops, we've given workshops all over schools in Quebec and Canada. We're going to global conferences across the world. We went to Calgary, Ottawa, Washington. Veronica went to Chicago last year, and she'll actually be going to Spain for a big food science conference in April. So it just goes to show you that within 3 years, this kind of initiative was really needed.
Veronica? So for our presentation today, we really have three goals for you guys, and we're going to outline them so it's really clear throughout the presentation. But our first one is we want to understand the state of online food and nutrition misinformation called the infodemic. This is our world. We're very aware of what's happening, but we want to show to you what a little bit of our world is like. Then we want to show you the tactics in which misinformation is spread most effectively, because it's not all misinformation is created equal. Some is better at spreading than others, and we're going to find out why. And then finally, not to end on a completely negative note, we're going to learn what we can do about it and how to limit its spread. So let's go into the very first goal. But instead of just explaining to you the crisis of information and misinformation, we really would rather just show you. So please take a listen to this video.
Most likely buying garlic from China. And that's a really bad thing because Chinese garlic is grown in sewer water.
Oat milk, rice milk, almond milk. Yeah. Does this have to go or is this something to include?
I think it's something to get rid of.
Kellogg, what are they doing to our kids that most people wouldn't know?
So Kellogg's is allowing artificial food dyes, which we know are carcinogenic. They cause cancer. They cause behavioral issues. They exacerbate autism, ADHD symptoms.
There's no almonds in the almond milk you're drinking every day. Heck, there's no peas in the pea milk, oats in the oat milk.
Nutrients found only in plant foods that are essential for optimal human health. None.
Now, the herbs that stimulate healing in the liver, so these are your liver herbs. Remember, sweet to the mouth, bitter to the liver. Bitter to the mouth, sweet to the liver.
Peanuts in general, not good for humans. They're legumes, they're full of lectins, which are harmful for the gut. They're full of peanut oil, which is a seed oil.
50-50. 50 ingredients and 50 ways to kill you.
Every time you go to the grocery store and you have a choice between organic and non-organic food, and you choose non-organic food simply because of the price, here's what you're telling the universe. You're telling the universe, please, universe, do not send me financial abundance.
So that is very chaotic, but that's just a little bit of what we see on our social media feed when you look up food, nutrition, and wellness information every single day. So we have a question for you guys, and please feel free to write in the chat. Have you yourself ever seen one of these topics on your social media? Write in the chat if you've seen, hashtag triggering, I agree. That's really good. But these are the topics that we see all the time. Maybe you've seen topics on seed oils or diets like keto or carnivore diet or inflammatory ingredients. If this is gut healthy or not. There's so many. So I'm sure most of us have seen at least one of these topics on our social media. All of the above. sadly. And if it wasn't extremely obvious, right now there is an infodemic of food, nutrition, and wellness misinformation online. But what exactly is an infodemic? It's a rapid and far-reaching spread of both accurate and inaccurate information about certain issues. And in our case, it's in the food and nutrition world. And why is this happening? We're going to get to, but we're going to talk about what is really happening to us. What are the consequences and repercussions of this actually happening? So there's a variety, but these are the main three that we're going to touch on today. But the first one is that when you're getting all of this information, it unfortunately encourages unrealistic expectations, body, food, lifestyle-wise, and can promote negative relationships with food, like restriction, etc. There's also, sadly, some distrust that goes on towards government, scientists, the food industry, and farming practices. We see this a lot with the use of pesticides or GMOs. And then finally, we see this infodemic of food and nutrition misinformation. It is greatly influencing our purchase and consumption habits. And to really instill this, we wanted to bring up some data from the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity and their 2025 report. And from their survey of almost 3,000 Canadians, they saw that 51% of Canadians say that they have changed what they buy or eat because of an alarming or concerning food claim. That's more than half of us. That is a little bit spooky. So we want to ask this question. Why is social media, because this is, of course, happening on social media, why is it the absolute perfect breeding ground for food and nutrition misinformation? And to answer that, we're going to get into a little bit more. So we need to start with the basics here of understanding that food and nutrition information is mostly outsourced on social media. This is where we get most of our information, especially younger people. This is where we go to immediately, the internet that brings us to social media sites. But have we ever asked ourselves what decides what information these social media platforms will be giving? And that answer is the algorithm. And if you've never heard of the algorithm before, it is essentially a set of rules that sort, prioritize, and deliver our content to us. So when we go on social media, it's not random. There's a very specific way in how our information is getting delivered to us. And the goal of these social media platforms is to keep us, and they're designed to keep us on this platform as long as possible. So they're going to curate the algorithm to make sure that we stay on the platform as long as possible. And to do this, they track our engagement. They see how long we watch certain videos, the topics of those videos, what we like, our age, our gender, our location, our socioeconomic background, all of this data and is fed into the algorithm, which then spits out content that they think that we would like. And this is very effective, and the algorithm is used because attention is the currency of social media platforms. It costs nothing to go on Facebook or Instagram, but what is the currency is our attention span. So content, and what we found over the years in our research, is that the content that evokes very strong emotions like fear, guilt, disgust, worry, and very oversimplified, fast and easy to digest information, that gets the most attention. And the algorithm knows that. So it's going to take that content and boost it in other people's algorithm, hoping that they're going to stay on the platforms longer as well. And unfortunately, food and nutrition information is really the perfect storm for the algorithm and misinformation, because it is the perfect combination of something very personal, something very emotional, cultural, and very omnipresent in our lives. And unfortunately, there are some people, we call them misinfluencers. So it's an influencer, but misinfluencer because they propagate misinformation. They use this to their advantage, and they gain a very large following by propagating and peddling misinformation about food and nutrition. And these people have hundreds and thousands and millions of followers, likes, engagement, etc. And popularity gives the illusion of expertise. So this fuels both trust and it fuels the algorithm. So it's going to push that person's content and platform to other people as well. And unfortunately, we see this phenomena of grifting with these influencers, where they'll take advantage of their notoriety and they'll use this to sell their courses, their products, their supplements, etc. And they're going to sell their expertise to us. So to sum that up, we have the infodemic. too much information, accurate and inaccurate. We have unmoderated content. Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, they're not taking this information off if it's inaccurate. They don't care if it's accurate or inaccurate or not. They care that it keeps you on the platform. And we have an engagement-based algorithm. It's going to push the content that gets the most attention, not what's the most accurate. And in all, we get right now an unclear and conflicting food, agriculture, nutrition, wellness, information atmosphere.
So now that we looked a little bit at the infodemic and how there's a massive spread of online food and nutrition misinformation, the next step of this presentation is to kind of help you guys spot the tactics that are used to spread misinformation. We're going to talk about four of them today. And what are they and why do they work so well? And I want to give a reminder to everybody that we can all fall for these tactics. Even as a scientist, one of them really gets to me and gets me hooked on a video. And so this is a reminder that if you've fallen for videos like these before, it is okay.
Sparkling.
So let's go into our first tactic. Watch the next video.
Sparkling waters to buy and avoid at Costco. First up, LaCroix. And at first glance, you think this stuff is healthy. Look at this. Zero calories, zero sweeteners, zero sodium. But look at this. Orange, naturally essence. There's nothing natural about a natural flavor. It's a chemical concoction that tricks your brain into thinking that it tastes like oranges.
All right, that's the first video. And how about one more?
You are literally feeding your kids plastic glue and industrial lubricants. That cream in the middle? It's not cream at all. It's rapeseed oil whipped with emulsifiers that act like edible glue, holding the sludge together. And the cookie part? Stripped cocoa and chemical stabilizers, enough to start clogging your arteries if you eat them too much.
Wow. Okay. So those two videos, let's go over a little bit what we heard in those two videos. So we have a lot of scary words. We have very general claims, a lot of chemophobia. So the chemicals or the chemicals inside a food product, the chemicals, but really not being specific about which chemicals. There's dangerous ingredient or dangerous food. They make very broad health claims like this specific plastic glue will clog your arteries. Again, not very specific into what's going to clog the arteries, just the food itself. And then no scientific evidence or explanation. So what kind of tactic is being used here? Well, really, we always start with this one. This is the most basic one. It's the appeal to fear or appeal to emotion about an ingredient or food category. So what does this look like in a video? They're villainizing a food item. They're villainizing an ingredient. They're calling it bad or unhealthy, or they're really focusing on it and making a general health claim like this ingredient will cause cancer. And then they present an imminent threat to health and well-being, as in especially appeal to fear or emotion in this case, in this tactic. They'll really say, well, this is, you're feeding this to your kids and it's causing cancer. And there's like, they're presenting something that's really threatening your family right now or yourself. And so we tend to really, really, really listen to those videos. And then they'll offer little to no evidence to support claims. In these two videos that we saw prior, we didn't see any, you know, scientific consensus, any scientific articles that were brought forward. And it's really just to make you scared. And bonus, if at the end of their video or in their feed or in their Instagram, they might have a link to a solution or a better option. This protein powder is really scary and one of the ingredients in it is really dangerous, but buy my protein powder. And so that's just a general tactic. We always start with this one and it's really helpful to spot it when you see it. Let's move on to our second tactic. Watch the next video really closely.
This is why you feel like shit after eating a bowl of pasta sprayed with synthetic pesticides, enriched and fortified with synthetic vitamins and folic acid. Leave it. Keep it. All of it. Take it. Vegetable oils, mono and diglycerides. Leave it. Organic peanuts and sea salt. Keep it. Has natural flavors. Leave it. Made with grass-fed beef bones, seasonings, and no natural flavors. Keep it. Questionable levels of mercury that can accumulate in your system. Leave it. Wild-caught and strictly regulated levels of mercury testing. Keep it. Butter that has natural flavoring. Are you kidding me? Leave it. 95% grass-fed butter. Keep it.
The amount of videos of people going through a Costco aisle that I've had to watch in the last few years of my life are quite enormous. So let's look at a second video.
I know the best anti-aging food on the planet. Let me show you guys. Come here. Meat. Seriously, meat. You might not realize this. You've possibly been told otherwise, but there are so many unique compounds in meat that are associated with longevity, that are associated with improvements in the health of humans long term. Things like taurine, studied across animal species associated with longevity, only found in meat. Creatine makes vegetarians smarter, improves muscle recovery, improves mental clarity. Vitamin B12, vitamin K2, ergothionine. There are so many unique compounds found in meat, along with collagen, which helps our skin, right? It's in meat. If you want to live strong, you want to live well, eat more meat. It's as simple as that.
All right. So compared to the first tactic, I'm sure most of you have seen differences and you have seen some fear-mongering, especially in the first video. But what do we call this tactic? This is the appeal to science and appeal to authority tactic. So this is one that as a scientist, I can fall for and that really gets me as well. So what does this look like? This is when you see videos online or misinfluencers or just any video that says, studies show that, science says that. Doctors don't want you to know, or doctors do want you to know this hack. And they use science or scientific terminology as their buzzwords. So they'll use, you know, they'll use chemical names to try and look scientific. They'll use studies that'll pop up. They also use their credentials without really any evidence. And they can also cherry pick data to make a health claim. So they'll show a few studies that pop up, and then that'll kind of make their argument real. And I want to be clear a little bit about why this works so well. And there's something positive about this tactic is, as a society, we have confidence and trust in experts and in science. That's a good thing. We want people to trust the experts in their field. We want people to believe in science because that makes sure that we're getting the right information. But in this case, there's kind of an automatic trust in that first video, ICU nurse versus Costco, right? She didn't have to prove that she was an ICU nurse. It just said it there. And someone who values healthcare professionals, I want to listen to what a nurse has to say about food and nutrition because she probably knows more than a misinfluencer or a random person online. And then we have the second video where you saw those three scientific articles pop up. And these videos really take advantage of the population's limited scientific literacy. What does that mean? Is that they know that people will not verify these sources. They won't verify your title. If the word doctor is in your Instagram, they might not go into your website and go check your credentials like I do, right? I'll try to go find your name and I'll try to go find your credentials and then not really find it online. And then people won't really verify the content. They won't look at the scientific articles, especially in the second video. Unfortunately, that misinfluencer did not reference them at all or didn't put links to them at all within his page. So are people really going to go watch them or go read those articles? Probably not. And they expect that. So that was for the appeal to science, appeal to authority tactic. Now, Veronica is going to finish with the two last tactics. Watch the next video closely.
Everybody's got a sweet tooth. So here are the best sweeteners to buy at Costco. Starting off with the absolute best, sugar. Psych. Pure cane sugar? No. Even though the sugar is organic, it's going straight to the bloodstream and it's spiking your insulin. Organic diabetes? Nah. And the first sweetener I recommend is organic maple syrup. These are two excellent options by Kirkland. I prefer the one in glass. It tastes so good. And you're getting 25 ounces in glass for $12.99. That's a great price. Another excellent sweetener is honey, and we're looking for two key words, raw and organic. And it's not this one, it's right over here. This is Kirkland's organic raw honey, and you're getting a 3-pack for $12.59. That is a very good price. Manuka honey is also a great option, but it is pricey, but you are paying for quality. So choose the right sweeteners for you and your family, and follow the channel for way more content.
All right, let's unpack this a little bit. So, sorry, by the way, for all of the Costco videos. We love Costco, just to put that out there, okay? But let's move on. So this video can seem kind of harmless, right? So this is a guy showing us what his favorite sugar source is, right? Okay, that maybe that's not so bad. Let's talk about one more.
start to notice things. Come across the mushroom section, we got white mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms. When you pay close attention, you can tell the uniformity. They were all bred to look alike. They were selectively bred, highly bred, for uniformity, speed, and yield. So you want to put these down, come across your natural genetic diversity. You start to see, right? When you understand what I'm trying to tell you, it's always the genetic diversity that matters. Avoid these Cavendish bananas. This is not real. Huh? This was highly selected and bred. It's not patented by nature. It's patented by man. This is the type of banana you want to avoid. Get yourself some baby bananas, like I have in my cart.
All right. So let's unpack this a little bit. In these two videos, we're seeing, although they might be very different, we're seeing a lot of the same themes here. So we're hearing more about pushing more natural products and how this is by Mother Nature and it's better, and how we want to avoid things that are selectively bred or man-made, and we want things the way that God intended, right? And both of these videos are using the same fallacy, and that fallacy is called the appeal to nature fallacy. And maybe you might have heard of this one. It's a very popular one, but this is great, and it's one of the easiest ones to dissect and critically think about. So the appeal to nature fallacy is essentially the belief that something is better or safer just because it's natural. And the other way works as well. It's saying that something is worse because it is artificial or unnatural. And like I said, this is one of the easiest ones to debunk because we can just pull up so many examples of very natural and normal things in our life, like natural poison, cyanide, arsenic, ricin, if you've seen Breaking Bad, untreated water system. I can't just go to, you know, a lake and drink the water, nor would I want to, right? That's very natural, but I don't want to die. And in our world, we have food science, you know, it's very popular in food safety to talk about foodborne pathogens. Those are like E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria. Those are all very natural in their own ecosystems, but we don't necessarily want that for ourselves, right? And other things like allergens, natural disasters, the list goes on. It's natural, doesn't mean it's better. And the appeal to nature fallacy is so effective, especially right now, because there is increasing, we're increasingly more skeptical in our society about the food industry specifically, and they want transparency. And the word natural feels like a shortcut to be able to trust something. I don't know what the food industry did in this, but this one says natural. Okay, I'll buy it. That's okay. And it aligns with our desire for control and simplicity in a very complex nutrition landscape. You go to a grocery store, there's endless options, and you want the best for yourself, your family in terms of nutrition. So seeing something that says natural, it feels like an easy solution. I'm doing the best for myself and my family. And influencers can often take this fallacy and go ham with it, because they're going to frame their own products that they sell as natural, clean, chemical-free, and they're going to create like a health halo around their products without ever needing to prove that it's better, more effective, or safer. Now we're going to talk about our last fallacy here, and this is a bonus round, and this one we've actually never shown in any workshop before, and we're very excited and slightly nervous to show you today, but let's watch one more video and talk about one more fallacy.
Toxic foods Amish people never buy from the supermarket. Instead, we make them ourselves. First, beef. This is real beef from our own cattle that live on pasture and sunshine. This is not beef. This is industrial meat filled with pink slime, ammonia gas, and hormones from a cow that never saw a blade of grass. Second, honey. This is real honey from our own bees, still full of living enzymes. This is not honey. It is mostly ultra-filtered corn syrup that has been heated until every medicinal property is dead. Third, peanut butter. This is real peanut butter we ground ourselves on the farm with nothing but peanuts and a little salt. This is not peanut butter. It is a jar of sugar and hydrogenated oils with just enough peanuts to put them on the label.
All right, so we're going to open up the chat here and try and have a little bit of a conversation before we get through this. But what are your immediate impressions with this video? Do you know what kind of fallacy she was using? Or what do you think? Basically, what are your thoughts about this video? Very good. That is very good. So someone did answer it in the chat. And let's talk about that a little bit. So that video was AI generated. That was not a real person. That was not a real woman. And it's okay if you didn't notice it. Priscilla and I got fooled at first too. But let's dive into that just a little bit more, okay? So right now, we're seeing AI and it finally flourish, unfortunately, in our world of food, nutrition, wellness, misinformation. All of the accounts that you see on the screen right now are not real people. All of these are AI generated. And if you look at the their platforms down below, you can see how many followers each one has. Hundreds and thousands. And on the right, the Chinese medicine guy, he has almost 1 million followers. And everyone in the comments of these videos are entirely oblivious to the fact that this is AI generated. These are not real. And what happens with these videos, as we're going to see in the next slide, is that it always goes to the same thing. So in these people's biographies of their accounts, there's always a link under. And you might be asking, what is that link for? And if you go to click the link, it is always something they're selling. It's either a supplement, a probiotic gummy. In this case, we see that the Amish lady is selling her Amish cookbook and her recipes and whatnot. But in every single description of every video, there is the link to go push to or trying to push you to get to buy something. This happens every single time. And these are not just three. There is tens of hundreds right now of accounts like this that are propagating and using AI, not real people, and using their fake experiences to try and get you to buy something. So this is what we're seeing right now. This is the most topical thing in our world. And one of the scariest things that's happening right now is utilizing AI to spread misinformation in our world of food and nutrition.
So now that Veronica and I went over the four tactics, so we talked about appeal to fear and emotion, we talked about appeal to science and appeal to authority, using your credentials to kind of further your agenda, appeal to nature. And then finally, you know, one of the tactics right now is AI being used to kind of grift you into buying products and it's not even a real person. We want to talk about what can you do about this and how can you limit the spread of this misinformation. So, Veronica?
By far, the most effective way to stop the spread of misinformation is, thankfully, the easiest, and it is to spot it. So let's get into that. We're going to talk about a couple ways that you can use some of these red flags, take them with you when the next time you're scrolling on Instagram and Facebook, that will maybe let you stop and think about what you're watching online. So the very first red flag is using their personal experience as a fact. This is called anecdotal evidence. So if we have an influencer saying, oh, I tried keto and I lost 30 pounds, everyone should try keto, maybe take a step back because one person's experience is not everyone's experience or is not going to be everyone's experience. Very simple. We've talked about this a lot. If the answer to their problem is their own product, immediately swipe away. Not credible. Another one, villainizing one ingredient, saying like seed oils, for example. Seed oils are going to kill you. It's causing all of your inflammations, making you depressed. Okay, probably not if that's just one ingredient. Next one. No references provided. This is like what we've seen in Priscilla's appeal to science and authority. You're talking about science as this, you know, where's the references? Where's the citations? Nowhere to be found. Click away. Another one is that experts will almost always never say the words best, worst, always, or never. And I know I just said it, but let's take that with a grain of salt. Science, health science, food, and nutrition are very nuanced topics, and experts know that. So there's no polarizing, one food is the best, one food is the worst. Everything has nuance attached to it. And finally, the last one is the end-all be-all miracle food. We see this a lot, like beef tallow is going to cure your hormone dysregulation, or kale is going to, you know, make you lose 20 pounds. The end-all be-all miracle food, it doesn't work. Balance is there and variety is there for a reason.
So now that we looked a little bit up at the red flags, we want to talk about how do we effectively counter all of this misinformation. And honestly, it's not like we can counter all of it, but here are two ways that the Food Truth Project did it. So We've combated misinformation using the digital approach and our community approach. So I'm going to talk to you guys a little bit about the digital approach and what you can do to really mitigate food and nutrition misinformation. So first off is you can seek information from credible evidence-based sources. But you might ask, Priscilla, how do I know if that person or website is credible? And feel free to take a picture of this slide if you want to remember it. But really, the basics are check qualifications, experts versus influencers. Really look into their bio or their website to see what their credentials are. That's really helpful. Look for evidence, not just opinions or anecdotes. Watch for the fear-based or the absolute claims, like the appeal to fear fallacy. Cross-check with reputable sources, you know, not just one account, but look at many accounts, government, health organizations, and other experts in that field. And then ask yourself always at the end is, are they selling something to you? Because it is really to further their agenda and to make money off of the person to be like, this is bad, but buy my product. I know we say this a lot across this whole presentation, but really is something that it's so telling and sometimes we can forget. And we think the person just wants our best healthcare for us, right? And then credible information includes nuance and not extremes. Another thing to think about in your digital approach or when you're on social media is pause and think before sharing food and nutrition content. So this is something that came out of Nature Human Behavior, an interesting article, that 75% of online content is shared without ever clicking through or reading. So usually we share based on headlines and not what the actual information inside is, which is really dangerous and spreads misinformative claims before you can even realize it. Clicking on not interested in Instagram or Facebook is really powerful. And this is something that not a lot of people know that they can do. So in Instagram, you can click on the side of the video if you see some misinformation or some influencer that's trying to sell you something or that's being really fear-mongering, you can click on not interested, and same thing on Facebook. Now, coming back to the algorithm, there's an algorithm function on Instagram on the top right where you're scrolling on Reels. You can actually check what your algorithm thinks you're interested in now, and it asks you what you want to see more of. So in our case, you know, we have science communication, literacy, evidence-based food information. We want to follow dietitians, food scientists as well. You know, you can see here McGill University, things like that. And you can remove some of the topics as well that Instagram has put forward for you. And finally, one of the final things in a digital approach is really following science communicators and experts who discuss nutrition with nuance and balance. So we highly suggest following some of these or all of these accounts if you don't follow them already. Personally, I really like Dr. Ids and his books called Saturated Facts. I'm plugging it in. I'm not making any money off of it, I promise. And at the end, Dr. Jessica Nurek as well is a very interesting RD and PhD in nutrition. And she kind of looks more at things in the US. So it's really interesting. And finally, you know, understanding how algorithms shape what you see, especially with what Veronica spoke about in the beginning and how social media can supercharge misinformation. Consider reducing social media and screen time accordingly, because that does reduce how much food and nutrition misinformation you can see online. And I know that's not necessarily the information that people want to hear, but it is one that we have to bring forward.
So now that we talked about the digital side of things, what you can do online, now let's talk about what we can do within our communities and in person when we see people face to face. So we may think that misinformation only lives online and it's like a thing that only happens on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, but it happens just as much in real life. And the conversations that we have with people in our everyday lives really does shape us and our behavior and what we think and other people as well. And right now it does feel like our world is very polarized. It's either you're right, you're left, you're right, or you're wrong. You can do team science, not team science, vax, anti-vax. Like everything feels super polarized. But in reality, people are very nuanced and they're much more nuanced than we see online. And people deserve empathy and respect and a real conversation. So I'm going to start that. What not to do when you're trying to engage in a conversation with someone who may not think the way that you do about your area of expertise, or you're talking about a topic in food and nutrition. There's a lot of things not to do, but these are the main three. Don't dismiss their concerns right away. Really, you don't have a condescending tone. Don't just be like, oh, that's stupid. You just saw it online. Like, don't. It shuts off any point of connection and it doesn't really work. Next one, I had to learn this the hard way, especially with members of my family, an aunt in particular, of turning everything into an argument, okay? I am a very passionate person about what I do, and sometimes it can elevate, and I had to learn this the hard way. Don't turn it into an argument. It's really not effective. It's not useful. It's not helping anyone. Another one is that scientists are guilty of always, you know, a lot of the time, is overloading people with facts right away. You can be like, well, actually, a systematic review said no one cares. Hey, they're checked out. No one cares about your facts, okay? Talk to them one-on-one. Exactly. We're going to talk about next one, about what to do. What to do, lead with curiosity, not correction. What this means is ask questions and be curious. Ask them what exactly they think. How did they get that information? Where did you get that information? Why do you think like this? And it's not like you're not asking in a critical way of like, why are you like this? You know, no one wants that. No one wants to feel like they're stupid. So ask them questions, really get to the bottom and try to understand where they're coming from. Another one is acknowledge their perspective and find common ground. People have these beliefs because at the end of the day, they care about their health, their family's health, what they put in their bodies, where their money's going. It's all very, these are all normal things that people care about, and we can find common ground. I care about my health and my food too. That's great. Let's talk about it. Another one is you can share your experience and maybe some data if you feel inclined in a nice, not overloading way, but don't lecture them. You don't want to be there. No one cares if you want to go on a 20-minute rant about seed oils and how they're actually better than saturated fat. No one cares. No one cares. Just share your experience and don't lecture them. And I wanted to say this because I know there's some communicators and maybe some marketing people on the call that not all hope is gone. And it can feel very isolating sometimes, and this is a losing battle. But I wanted to bring up some stats again from the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity and their 2025 report. These are a top of 10 stakeholders that people go to in our community and in our lives for reputable information on food and nutrition and agriculture and wellness information. And the top two are scientists and farmers. And that makes me very happy and very hopeful. There is still hope for us, and we still remain in our role as very highly credible people and relatable and important messengers of this information.
So now that we learned a little bit what we can do about food and nutrition misinformation, how to limit its spread, I want to do a quick recap, okay? I want to be honest here with everybody that's listening. The infodemic is here to stay. So accurate and inaccurate info will continue spreading across social media, and AI, the algorithm will supercharge that misinformation because it gets a lot of clicks and it gets a lot of attention. We now have AI avatars that have entered the chat, and I keep seeing accounts like this pop up every single day. And so it is not clear who is behind those AI avatars, but I'm sure we're going to have more info as time goes on. And then let's be honest, people will still get their nutrition and food information online, which means any SciComm initiative like the Food Truth Project and others are really crucial to counter misinformation online and in person. So I wanted to end with some positive things that are happening. So we're seeing more science communicators in food, nutrition, agriculture, and wellness online. We're seeing some schools limit the use of social media and phones, which I personally believe is a positive thing. We've seen Science Up First, which is a magnificent Canadian platform that counters misinformation, that received a large grant in 2022 and is still ongoing and very popular. And finally, since we're both based in Montreal and Quebec, I wanted to bring forward some initiatives that bring scientific and food literacy to schools, and they're really increasing. So we have École au Champ, a NutriFact that came out this week from Université Laval, and the government of Quebec has a platform called Éducamiam. So what I mean by all this is I'm encouraging everybody to look at either their provincial or national initiatives that talk about scientific and food literacy. And And so thank you, everybody. That concludes our webinar today and presentation. And we really hope you enjoyed it. And we are now ready for some questions. We are curious to see what you guys have. So thank you to Farm and Food Care and Canadian Food Focus for having us today.
Thank you. Oh, we've got some questions hopefully flowing in there. Thank you so much, Priscilla and Veronica. I really think that this work and this presentation needs to be shown far and wide. This can't get in enough people's inboxes and screens. We need to spread this information. And you really dove into all of the tactics that we can use to disseminate, and you've shown us some really great examples. And I know that we're all seeing those examples showing up in all of our feeds. So I'm going to let you hopefully pop into some of these questions as they come in. So one that has come in here is, what kind of reaction are you getting from students that you present to?
That's a great question. And we've been doing this for 3 years now, Priscilla. And I would like to bring forward the best reactions that I get are from young women and young girls, especially. And this, they come up to us after these presentations and they feel safe to share their concerns about food and what their like lifestyle is like at home. And they bring to us being like, my sister has been on the keto diet for 3 months. She's not feeling really well. What can I say to her? And she's bringing forward these like very personal, vulnerable moments in when it comes to food, nutrition, and her personal life. And that is a really special moment for us to be able to connect with other young women, because this is why we started this platform in the first place. So that's one special one. But overall, it's very funny because kids are always on social media. Kids are always online. And sometimes when we present this information, I feel like really old. I'm just like, you guys seen this? They're like, yeah, we saw this like 6 months ago. And I'm like, oh, okay. So it's really interesting. But Priscilla, what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Overall, in high school students, I think what, you know, shocked me the most is when in high schools, we talk about diet culture and kind of the culture surrounding thinness for women and how little boys have to look jacked at age 14. And, you know, we asked the room, like, who's heard about this diet or that diet? And most of the room raised their hands. And these are 14, 15 year olds. And so we know that diet culture has a huge effect on teenagers and young people. And so seeing kind of them talk about it, realize it, and learn the red flags, it's not necessarily for them to just have food and nutrition literacy. It's about young people just knowing how to better scroll. And that's what we bring forward in schools. And so we really do see that we have an impact with them. And we have teachers that ask us every year to come back with their new class. And it's really wholesome. And we love doing it. It's really a passion of ours. Great question. I love that.
A question here. What are some of the misconceptions specifically around farming and food production that you think maybe deserve a little bit more attention right now?
That's a good question. So some of the misconceptions I think that we're seeing, and we talk about this and it's still very current, is what are GMOs? And I think people hear that term online. And so disseminating what GMOs are is really important. We do actually disseminate GMOs in high schools. And so we're trying to start them from a young age to better understand what farming is and what GMOs are. And then I think the second one, and this one, in my opinion, is a little harder, is talking about the use of pesticides and herbicides, because there's so many different regulatory agencies and so much information online. People can get really confused about what's being used on their products and not. And so we try to make sure that they have access to good resources, Canadian Food Focus, CropLife, and also with Government of Canada, just to better understand how their food is being grown. And as food scientists, we're very honest with people in the front of the room, whether we're in front of adults or kids, is we need to feed 8 to 9 billion people in a matter that's safe, in a matter that's effective, in a matter that's nutritious. And so at the end of the day, you know, if we expect everybody to have their own little farm and their own little garden in their backyard, you know, that's not sustainable long term. So we're very honest with that, is that we have to grow our food, and we're growing it in a way that is safe and that is in large amounts for the population. But yeah, I think that's some of the misconceptions. Veronica, do you agree with that?
Maybe I do. I do. And I also wanted to point out, we gave a workshop about 2 weeks ago to an elderly group of people, and it was called The Power of the Pulse. And we were talking about all different kinds of pulses, and the majority of people didn't know that pulses were grown in Canada. And we were so thankful to have gone on our farm tour. And shout out to Dorothy and Penny. I know you're on this call. And we were able to share all of our information that we gathered on that farm tour. We showed them what a lentil farm and a lentil field looks like. We showed them where different pulses are grown in Canada. It was a fantastic experience. So it's also breaking down and showing them what Canadian agriculture can look like. And it's not always winter, right? We do grow things here and we like to be proud of them. So it's also engaging in that sense in the community.
Great. Thanks, Veronica and Priscilla. Yeah, those one-on-one opportunities for in-person learning can go a long way in this work. So another question coming in here, are there higher level policies like social media regulation or mandatory media literacy education that you would think would make a big impact?
Definitely. And we talk about this quite often. And the biggest hurdle, I think, here with having any kind of content moderation or any kind of regulation in this area is that we know there's going to be the free speech argument of you can't, lessen other people's voices just because it's not what you like to hear. Like we know that argument is going to come up over and over again. And there is a distrust in science right now. So even if people say like, oh, this is evidence-based, they're still going to believe, oh, well, you know, everything's funded by the food industry, everything's funded by big food or big pharma. So it's like, whatever you try and say to, you know, try and support the fact that we want regulated content and moderation, there's people who are going to have a counter argument for it. So I think regulation, especially AI regulation, I wish we had that before all of this started. Because now we see it being misused quite a bit. And what I would love to see is mandatory media literacy. And I think Priscilla could talk about that more because she's very passionate about it.
Yeah, so Erin, thank you for that question. I think in terms of media literacy education and how to spot red flags and all that and how to better scroll, I really do believe that that should be a class that's mandatory in schools, just like sex education, just like drug and alcohol education that we give to students. I think how to better scroll should be right up there, and it's just as important. And so that's why we started our workshops in high schools. And we're hoping with the Quebec government, the provincial government, with their new, in French, it's called La Politique Bioalimentaire. So the new food regulations coming in and kind of the plan for the next 10 years, they do want to focus on food literacy. So we're hoping to kind of have that discussion with them in the next year or two to see if we can get our classrooms all over the province. But it is difficult because schools don't have much funding. And so we'd have to figure that out. But I think a mandatory media literacy class would be a great way to go. And like I said, at the end, I do believe that schools that are limiting phones is a good thing overall. I know they still have their phones at night. And then the other thing is parents have to see what their kids are consuming online as well, which is a whole other topic, but still very interesting. Thank you. That's a great question.
Great. Well, we'll take one more question here as we're approaching the end of the hour. So do you find there's a specific audience, age, gender, that tend to fall for misinformation?
Definitely. Vulnerable demographics are the number one candidate to unfortunately be dissuaded by misinformation, and that includes young people, so people who don't have fully formed critical thinking skills yet, like teenagers or preteens.
The preteen boys get the misinformation of like, oh, you need this amount of protein and you have to be jacked and no woman is going to love you if you're not jacked. And then the women get that you have to be skinny or you have to be pretty to have any kind of self-worth. Another kind of group is new mothers. Again, another vulnerable group, a new stage of life. And one that I'm seeing now is perimenopausal and menopausal women. So navigating this new stage in your life, there's all kinds of supplements and courses that grifters are trying to sell you because there is no research, right? Not enough research at least, on women's health, and especially at that time of your life of perimenopause and menopause.
So it's everyone. Yeah, it's everyone, but you know, at different stages. And also like with the AI, you know, young people, we have a better tendency to spot in. We can see it right away because we're, you know, we've had cell phones for longer, et cetera. But I know that those type of AI accounts, the Chinese medicine, et cetera, I'm for sure, you know, people that are a little older that didn't have cell phones or social media for a very long time, can probably fall for it. And we can all fall for it. And that's the whole point.
Well, it all starts with a conversation. So thank you for bringing this awareness to this entire group. We have a diverse audience today, some that can share it with their clients and their networks, and others as communicators who are trying to partner with Canadians to help them better understand where their food comes from. So thank you for your time. We're going to be sharing this recording. So I know we've had a few people ask for the slides. So hopefully you can take photos and get that information when you review the recording. And we'll be sending a survey out as well. So thank you both so much for your time today. And we hope that we can partner with you again and maybe do a part two in the future and continue the conversation.
Thank you so much for having us. Yay. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Just a couple more resources for you as we end the session. So Canadian Food Focus has a really great resource that you can use to connect with others doing the work. So educational programming for food professionals to provide information about Canadian farming and food. So food professionals can sign up for the forum newsletter and the LinkedIn group to learn more for additional resources. And another resource for those working in communications, we do have a page on LinkedIn called AgriFood Connect, and that is an opportunity for communicators to come together, get some resources that they can use to collaborate and communicate effectively with Canadians. So we hope that you'll follow this page for some additional webinars and resources that are available. And again, as we wrap up, we'll be sending out a survey. You can see the QR code here. We ask you to fill that out, give us some feedback on today, but most of all, provide us with some ideas for future webinars. We want to continue providing resources and ideas that are topical and really important to discuss. So we'd love to hear your feedback on that. And again, the recording will be sent to all attendees. So thank you again to Veronica and Priscilla for such an informative session. And thank you all for being part.